connect people and places with an incredible speed we've come to take for granted. But even as they provide access from one neighborhood to another, highways also have a history of dividing and sometimes nearly obliterating the very neighborhoods they intersect. Perhaps the most controversial example of this phenomenon in Kansas City is Highway 71. It took 50 years and several rounds of compromise to get the highway built. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today we'll hear about ongoing criticism of this north-south thoroughfare in the heart of the city, as well as initiatives for Highway 71 and the neighborhoods, it affects most profoundly. But first, KCUR's Suzanne Hogan talks to a woman who played a key role in the road's construction.
Sometimes I just like to stand here, you know, and look and watch the traffic, seeing how much goes, and it's just kind of fun.
85-year-old Mamie Hughes is standing in the middle of a bridge that's named after her. The bridge is a passage for Meyer Boulevard to cross over 71 Highway. As streams of traffic zoom underneath us and across the bridge, it's hard to imagine that this set of highway, a 10-mile stretch from the three trails crossing at 435 North to the downtown loop, had once been houses and businesses. Hughes says this bridge was part of a compromise that made the highway possible to make sure that it wouldn't divide communities, but would rather connect them.
This is for all of us. This is a people's bridge.
Plaques on both sides say just that, the people's bridge. In the 15 minutes we spend on the bridge, 10 pedestrians cross over the highway.
Hello.
Also within that span, we're stopped by a driver wondering how to get to Lee Summit.
What did he say?
Lee Summit South? Yeah.
Which in some ways is telling. The highway was built to connect people from suburbs like Lee Summit, Grandview, and the Northland to downtown. In 1951, Kansas City officials proposed to build a north-south link to U.S. Highway 71 through the heart of the city. One of the proposed destinations was the streetcar tracks along Brookside Boulevard. But the city decided on a more direct and cheaper route in Kansas City's east side, closer to Prospect Avenue and Euclid. Mamie Hughes and I sit in a much quieter spot at her home as she recalls how people first reacted to the idea of a freeway in their neighborhoods.
It was the feeling that 71 freeway is going to divide a segregated area.
The neighborhoods along the proposed route were home to mostly African Americans, like in Beacon Hill, Ivanhoe, and Key Coalition. As the city and Department of Transportation started to buy up properties, Hughes says people were confused. They didn't understand why houses had been purchased but were sitting vacant for so long, what the route was going to be, or how they would be affected.
We have to be concerned about where exactly this road will be coming. Because it's already segregated, the idea was, okay, this has already been done to us. What now will it mean when my house won't be here anymore? And what will I be able to settle for?
Concerns over splitting up the neighborhoods, suburban sprawl, and the effects on inner city development, plus questions about potential environmental impacts, led to a major lawsuit filed in 1973. It put the project on hold for 10 years. This lawsuit didn't stop the roadway's construction, but it led to a series of compromises. One was to hire an ombudsman, a community representative. That's where Mamie Hughes came in. She had been working for the Black Economic Union and had protected properties in danger of demolition and acquisition in the 18th and Vine District. She helped the area get designated as a historic district, so she had a lot of experience when it came to dealing with property issues. But by the time she was brought on board, the lawsuit had been settled, and her role became to educate people about their property rights.
When I started to work in 1986, there were 700 properties to be acquired.
These properties included vacant parcels and businesses, but mostly were houses. Hughes didn't have contact information for any of these properties, so she drove all around town, writing down addresses, literally going door to door to introduce herself. She'd say,
"My name is Mamie Hughes. I've been hired. I'm an ombudsman. I am here to tell you what you can do in order to satisfy your interaction with the roadway.
Hughes helped inform people on how to obtain compensation for their losses. In the total time span of the highway's construction, more than 10,000 people were relocated. She says her role was to empower people so that they could have more control over what was happening to them. She also advocated for concerns within the community about how the highway would look.
This roadway is going through neighborhoods. Some of this roadway, the residents feel that the road is right in their front yard because it is very close.
Another outcome for the lawsuit was that Highway 71 would be less of a freeway and more of a parkway. Emmanuel Cleaver was on the city council during the litigation and was mayor during the highway's construction. He pushed for beautification plans to put plants and trees along the roadway. He also renamed the roadway to Bruce R. Watkins Drive after a prominent black leader who was active in the civil rights movement. Because it wasn't a freeway, it would have lower speed limits. And perhaps most controversial was the addition of bridges and streetlights.
These are arteries that are there for the people who live there. They need to be able to go across back and forth, and those traffic lights control that.
When Bruce R. Watkins was finally completed in 2001, 50 years after its first inception, there were three traffic lights on the roadway at Gregory Boulevard, 55th Street, and 59th Street. These intersections have proven to be some of the most accident-heavy spots on Kansas City roadways, and Hughes took a lot of the heat for the lights.
I would say to people, if you lived here, you would want to get from west to east or east to west.
She feels like she doesn't get as much flack as she used to, and she maintains that her involvement with this project is one of her greatest achievements. She has no regrets. Today, the road sees 80,000 to 90,000 cars a day. And as far as she sees it,
over the years, people have adjusted. People sometimes complain, but they are accustomed to it.
There are still people who criticize the highway's construction, how it tore up neighborhoods, its lasting effect on their development. Some people say that there aren't as many plants or trees as there should be, or that the roadway is too slow or unsafe because of the lights. Still, the Missouri Department of Transportation says usership on the roadway has only increased over the years, and it has proven to now be a vital connecting piece within Kansas City's transportation system. Suzanne Hogan, KCUR News.
Suzanne spoke to Mamie Hughes as part of KCUR's Beyond Our Borders series, exploring lines that unite and divide us as a city. We'll be getting to our live in-studio guest shortly, but first,
why don't you talk to me? Why don't you talk to me?
This week, we've been asking you how you think Highway 71 has helped or hurt Kansas City. Here to share what you've been saying is social media producer Allison Rollitz, who visits us every Thursday for Tell KCUR on Central Standard. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Gina.
So what was the genesis of this particular question?
Well, our regular listeners might remember that a few months ago when we started our Beyond Our Borders series, that we asked the public, what are the most divisive lines in Kansas City? And they came back with four main ones, Truce Avenue, the Missouri River, State Line, and the Johnson County, Wyandotte County border. But 71, Highway 71 also emerged, with some folks saying that 71 was becoming the new Truce. And as a station, we just really wanted to explore that.
Did anyone out there say that Highway 71 has helped Kansas City or made life better here?
Well, sure. As I think you would expect, mainly people said it did help with access. You know, for instance, on Twitter, Netta said that for people who live in the southwest part of Kansas City, it really helps them reach downtown and the plaza a lot better. You know, on Reddit, a guy named Cloudsdale said, you know, it really helps me to get to 435 from Midtown. And here's a phone message from Don, who talks about his daily commute.
I'm really impressed with 71, Bruce R. Watkins Drive. I live near 31st Street, so it helps me get to 75th and 63rd real quick, or 95th. I happen to work on 135th, so during that terror period when the guy was, you know, shooting on the freeway, I had to go the other way, and it took me 15 to 20 minutes longer to get to work. So, I mean, it's really wonderful.
So it sounds like for commuters, there's been a real blessing in this, and even just having an alternate route. But how did people say 71 has hurt Kansas City?
That kind of popped up in the feature that we just heard. People said that the neighborhoods still are being very much impacted by the construction that happened a while ago. For instance, Modi tweeted, "Someday Kansas City has to learn. Chopping up or destroying neighborhoods for convenience of drivers is not the way to go." And then in an email, Danny told us that 71 has just further segregated the city. And in another email, Arthur raises land use issues. He said, quote, 71 destroys the integrity of the neighborhoods in the northern, already densely developed area and promotes sprawl as it moves south. Our region needs agreed upon land use policies to stop this pattern of investment for limited transportation funds. And then, of course, there was a large section of people that brought up traffic issues.
What traffic issues did people raise?
Well, people mainly talked about the traffic pileups and the accidents along 71. For instance, on Twitter, Whitney called it a huge speed trap. On Facebook, Peter said the intersections on Highway 71 kill commute times during rush hour, particularly. And Fred emailed us this abrasive description of 71. "In my 65 years, I've driven in some of the worst traffic on the planet, and I'd rather drive in Rome, where they drive like kamikaze pilots, than to drive 71 Highway in rush hour."
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. And on Reddit, there was a big blow up. People just called the traffic lights stupid. This caller pretty much sums up their thoughts.
"Highway 71 is a great benefit in the city, but it's an absolutely ridiculous design to have the stoplights on it. It would actually connect the neighborhoods better if there were overpasses where there weren't stoplights for people to be hung up going either direction. So take the stoplights out, and actually then it'll work."
Wow. Well, so Allison, we've got guests in the studio who are going to address people's concerns and talk about efforts to make this stretch of road work better for the people who use it. Anything else our listeners mentioned that we ought to bring up during that conversation?
Well, Gina, I would just say for all the complaints we had, it was a very divisive discussion. People were very pro or against the Highway 71 being there. But there were a lot of sentiments that were pretty mixed. A lot of people didn't really have clear-cut answers. For instance, Roberta on Facebook, she said, and she actually lives near Highway 71. She said, "I had mixed feelings about the highway because I like driving through the city and being part of it. But I have to admit, it's so much easier to get south from Midtown. I think the downside is many people don't drive through the city anymore." So her point is just that 71 being this nice cut through and being convenient is just taking people out of the city.
Well, we've got convenience versus neighborhoods and city development, sounds like, and we've got a lot to talk about. So thanks so much, Allison. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Gina. And as always, if you're listening to this and you want to chime in, we're still taking your comments, and just tweet us with the hashtag TellKCUR.
Okay, so we've got a lot of things to talk about now. Let's just get to it. I'd like to introduce Steve Porter, Senior Customer Relations Specialist with the Missouri Department of Transportation, or MoDOT. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Gina.
And we're also joined by Tom Garand. He's the Assistant Director of Transportation for the Mid-America Regional Council. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
As well as Willie Kolkiger. He's a retired police officer who lives in one of the neighborhoods affected by 71 Highway. Willie, where do you live exactly?
I live down at 44th and Agnes.
So when did you move to the neighborhood, and how did you end up there in the first place?
I have always lived in the neighborhood. I came to Kansas City in 1956, and since that time I've always lived within three or four blocks of the freeway route.
Well, we're going to get to Willie Kolkiger's firsthand experience living near Highway 71 in a second. But Steve Porter, you've been listening to what Mamie Hughes has to say about the highway, what our listeners have had to say about it, too. Complaints about traffic lights and disruption of neighborhoods along 71, as well as suburban sprawl facilitated by 71. I assume these are complaints you've heard before.
Sure. We understand the concerns. It's something that we're living with because we've put three traffic lights on principal arterial highway that takes the same volume of traffic as I-435.
Why are there stoplights?
That is a court-ordered compromise from what we had originally planned, and they will remain there until either the community decides they want to move forward with something different, or if there is a safety issue that brings it to the forefront, and then we'll have an urgent dialogue with the community.
What prompted that court order?
A lot of what Mamie said, people in the neighborhood, in the path of this, were facing a division, a large concrete barrier. And any time you have a busy thoroughfare, whether it's Prospect or Bruce R. Watkins or a major highway like 435 or I-70, you create a barrier that makes it more difficult for people and wildlife and everything else to get across.
We heard that there's a high rate of fatalities around those traffic lights. Is that something you can comment on and share with us? How bad is that problem?
Well, actually, we're finding that for a principal arterial, it has the same crash rates or in similar rates as any other principal arterial taking that same volume. So it's in line with the statistics that we would expect for that corridor.
So that's partly a perception issue?
Yes, it is, unless you happen to be a victim.
Right, in which case it's a huge problem.
Of course it is.
And the bridges came up. Why are there bridges?
The bridges and the aesthetic look of the bridges are there as part of the court-ordered settlement. We have bridges in interchanges and that sort of thing on all of our freeways and our major interstates, but the aesthetics, we wanted to make sure in working with Kansas City in the neighborhoods that it was attractive, that it was beautiful.
Well, that's interesting because we also just learned that this was envisioned as something that's sort of part freeway and part parkway. Can you explain that?
I don't think I'm the one that can explain that. I do know that that is what the vision was. I'm not sure that I would have a way to describe how that compromise came about.
Well, what is your own history and relationship with Highway 71, both personally and professionally?
When I was a young boy, we moved into Kansas City in November of 1958. And when we moved there, our neighbors said, don't invest very much money in your home as far as upkeep because you're in the corridor of the South Midtown Freeway and they'll be buying this.
What year is this again?
1958. I made through half of grade school, all of high school, and halfway through college before they bought out our home in 1970.
So how does that relationship affect, how does it affect your decision to work in the Department of Transportation, and how does it affect your professional relationship with this roadway?
Well, I have a understanding of infrastructure. I worked for the Kansas City Public Works Department while I was going to college, and thank you, you helped me get through college. Understanding the need for transportation, I love my neighborhood, but there were a lot of other factors that were dynamic at the time in the late 60s. There was integration, there was blockbusting, there was fear, greed. There were people moving up from the first starter homes into other neighborhoods and leaving the neighborhood. And those things, plus such things as the Dutch elm disease that were taking all the elm trees and changing the texture and the look of the neighborhood, those are all factors.
So do I understand you right that you're saying that the construction of the highway was one piece of a larger puzzle that changed the neighborhood you lived in?
Certainly.
Well, so we've heard a lot about the criticisms of Highway 71 and the change it's had, the change that you're saying was affected by other factors as well. But what was the thinking that led the city to create this highway?
Well, as I understand, late in the 40s and the early 50s, they realized that there should be a better corridor for 71 highway traffic than putting it over on Troost Avenue or down Prospect to get from the south part of the town and from places like Springfield and Joplin all the way into the downtown area.
Why were those avenues insufficient?
Because just a matter of capacity. There was a lot more traffic as the post-war era started to boom in the Southland. There were a lot more houses and a lot more traffic, and the economy was taking off. There was no way to get from, say, Cass County into downtown as quickly as conveniently.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're talking about Highway 71. If you'd like to weigh in on this conversation, go ahead and give us a call at 816-235-2888. We'll be turning to those calls later in the show. For now, Tom Garand of the Mid-America Regional Council, what's your perspective? Is Highway 71 achieving for our city what it was built to achieve?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. Obviously, with the conversation that we've heard, there are obviously, I think, pros and cons with what the freeway has accomplished and some of the impacts that it's had on the community. And I think we've learned a lot as a profession. We've learned a lot as owners of transportation infrastructures and as cities and local jurisdictions about how to try to do these things in a sensitive manner. And so clearly it's serving an important transportation function that's undeniable, but it's also undeniable that it's had an impact and a negative impact on the adjoining communities. And so really the question is, how do we work with what we have moving forward to make the best use of it and to achieve the benefits and the community revitalization and vitality that we've all sought out to achieve from the very beginning.
Well, Kansas City can't be alone in having, I mean, it's not alone in having a suburbanization that's started in the post-war era. Do you have any sense of how other cities deal with this issue of setting up highways that need to go through existing neighborhoods?
Well, it really is a phenomenon that took place across the country. As we were in a major freeway and interstate expansion era in the 40s and the 50s and through the 60s, and communities and cities are dealing with that in all sorts of different ways, from looking at alternatives to how do we utilize that space more effectively, whether that be for public transportation purposes, integrating biking and walking options into facilities, better integrating land use and economic development strategies that can correspond with and leverage the transportation that's built. We're seeing cities rip out interstates and freeways or cover them with parks and green space. And again, all sorts of different applications given this context, the cost and the feasibility.
There was a U.S. 71 transit study. I believe that was in 2012. It's pretty interesting. Could you tell us about it?
Sure. Mark, in partnership with Jackson County, the Kansas City, City of Kansas City, Missouri, and the Kansas City Area of Transportation Authority, undertook a joint evaluation of the U.S. 71 and Prospect corridors, really from downtown down into as far south as Grandview and even farther south into Belton, assessing the corridor as it exists and what are the opportunities to really improve public transportation and alternative transportation modes in those corridors. And what we found was there was really two distinct needs. There was an urban movement. There was on the arterial streets that was mentioned, the east-west connections across the corridor, as well as on Prospect as a very local trips and short-distance trips that were taking place. But there also is this need for regional movement from south to north and from north to south. And so those efforts really outlined a plan to really try to better utilize some of the existing space that we have in that corridor for improvements to public transportation, improved bus services, et cetera.
So your focus is really on the public transportation side of this.
That's correct.
Well, how is public transit ridership on 71 right now?
Well, it really is limited only by the amount of service that's on the street. And the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority operates an existing express bus service on that corridor down to Redbridge. But it really is, again, limited by the amount of resources that are invested into the operations of that service. Service is very well utilized. And so part of our thinking, part of our coordination with the county and with other jurisdictions was, how do we bring folks together to provide a higher level of service and fund that service sufficiently?
What's the answer to that question? How do you bring folks together on this?
Well, I think it's been amazing because I think we've seen a level of political support for public transportation options countywide that we haven't seen in years, and elected leadership who care a lot about really finding solutions to this problem. I mentioned the leadership at the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority and through local jurisdictions. It really is about broadening the conversation, and the entities at the table have been very willing to do that. One of the challenges today, to be honest, has been how we as a region fund public transportation services. The city of Kansas City is the primary funder. They're the only entity in the region with a dedicated financing source or tax to support public transit. And so as we think about how we connect services outside of the city to Grandview, to Eastern Jackson County, to the Northland, or even to Johnson County, this issue of funding and financial support for services is fundamentally critical. And we obviously need to develop a broader funding partnership. And we're starting to do that through, I mentioned, some of the partnerships that we formed to date.
When you've been forming these partnerships and meeting with people, do you get a sense of what the needs really are when it comes to people living in the neighborhoods around 71 and maybe even needs that public transportation may not be able to fix?
Well, I think without a doubt, people have communicated a need for and a desire for a higher quality of public transportation in many aspects. And the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority is aggressively moving forward with the city on improvements to the MAX or the development of a Prospect MAX line. They're looking for funding resources to make that possible, but the planning and the design is underway. That's one illustration of, I think, hearing loudly from the community about the need for arterial improvements that can support community revitalization and provide a higher quality of service. And we're hearing the same thing from the broader community outside of Kansas City, Missouri. I mentioned Grandview and Raytown and Lee Summit and Independence. And so really it's about defining services that are feasible, that can be financially supported, and advancing those accordingly.
That's really interesting because I'm hearing in your description of this that there's a difference between what people living in the neighborhoods need and what commuters using this as an artery from the outlying suburbs, what they need.
Very true. And one of the recommendations out of the U.S. 71 corridor study was really acknowledging that there are two distinct markets here that need to be served really independently. And one is the local needs of the neighborhoods, and the other is the regional needs, and that they need to be served fundamentally by different forms of services and different types of services in order for them to be effective. They're complementary, but they are, in fact, different.
Well, we'll get back to the question of how to reconcile those needs in a second. But Willie, you live in one of the neighborhoods, so let's talk to you about the local needs. What do you think are the major needs and concerns of people living around Highway 71?
Well, like many of the people, one of the things that I major complaint are the stoplights, stop traffic, those three bridges, or stop cross flow traffic there on 55th. 59th and 71st Street, and that design, that...
We'll give you a moment.
That design is a typical example of too many cooks in the kitchen, whereby we couldn't decide whether we wanted a freeway or a parkway, and so you wind up with a compromise which doesn't really serve the needs of anybody. But my chief complaint about 71 Highway was that it started... 50 years ago? And this may not have been the purpose of it, but it served to buy up the land. It added to or helped to facilitate white flight out of the community. It split up the blacks community, that voting. I think one of the consequences of it was that voting power was split, so they couldn't elect councilman or the other city officials that they wanted to elect, so that the voting was diluted. And then when that land laid two blocks wide, corridor laid open there for, 40, 50 years, with nothing being done to it, nobody was making an investment in it, no one buying houses around there because it was an ugly neighborhood given over to crime and criminals and a lot of the things happening in those vacant spaces. And finally, when they did do it, when they finally decided to complete it, it looked like they did it on the cheap, which there was down in the third district going down, you say, past 39th Street going downtown. There are no sound barriers. People are living there. One of my friends, Jimbo Willie Clay, lived right there on the right across the road from it. And the traffic whizzed by there every day with all kinds of noise. And there's no sound buffers whatsoever. So he sat on his porch every day and cussed because of the fact that he thought that they would move or they would buy a mound or something, and they did not. And he sat there for 40 years with that problem. So it has its good part and it has its bad part. 71 used to come into town. Prospect was come down Prospect, and then you go to Truce, and I think Holmes was also an alternate route. So you just never knew how to get across town from south to north.
We'll get back to all of these concerns shortly when we return to this conversation about Highway 71 and how it both connects people and divides neighborhoods in just a minute. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about how Highway 71, or 71 Highway if you prefer that, runs north and south through the heart of Kansas City, has affected both suburban commuters and people living in the neighborhoods it cuts through. You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888. Our in-studio guests this morning are Steve Porter of the Missouri Department of Transportation, Tom Garand of the Mid-America Regional Council, and neighborhood resident Willie Kolkiger. He's a retired police officer. Now, for those who have just recently tuned in, let's revisit some of the history of Highway 71 kind of briefly. Steve Porter, could you recap some key moments and critical debates?
Well, obviously in 1951, when they began discussing the South Midtown Freeway, that was the beginning of the concept. In the late 50s, they had pretty well decided where the corridor was going to be. And in the late 60s, they began buying pieces of the corridor.
And Steve, you were just over the break telling a little story about a stretch of highway that you like to point out because of its personal connection to you in your life. Would you mind telling that story to our listeners?
Well, between Meyer Boulevard and 63rd Street, there is a northbound ramp, collector ramp, and each time we drive past that, I point out that I used to live right here. My bedroom was right where the ramp goes.
Steve, right before we went to break, Willie was talking about some of the way that people live in the neighborhoods that are right up against 71 experience that highway. And one of the things he was talking about was someone who lives right up next to it and has that there's a lot of sound, that there's this sound issue. And that's a criticism you hear, that it's a highway that runs through right through people's front lawns. I mean, there's hardly any separation. How do you respond to that?
With the kind of volume that we have going through there, there's going to be a lot of sound. We have sound walls in areas like Three Trails Crossing and on 435 down by Eastwood Traffic Way, places like that, some up north of the river. But I believe back when it was being designed, the Bruce R. Watkins wasn't required to have as much sound mitigation.
Well, Willie, how do you experience the sound? You talked about your friend, but how big of a problem do you think it is?
It is a problem. It's a problem for those people that have to live there and that are living there, among other things. But to get back to what Steve is saying, you have to ask yourself the question, why were sound barriers put up in Three Trails out there at 435 or with Eastwood or north of the river, and none were put up down on 39th and Garfield and Euclid, where people are still living?
Do you have a theory about an answer
to
that
question? Well, there's a lot of minorities down there. That's why. Lots and lots of minorities. So anytime a compromise is made, that's the same thing about the bridges, the cross traffic. Whenever compromises were made, if a compromise had to be made, most of the time the minorities had to pay the price. Those people who were living down there, trapped down there, who could not get out. And so therefore they were stuck with it, and the powers that be decided, let's move along.
Well, Tom might know more about the engineering side of it, and when federal regulations came to be for requiring sound mitigation and sound studies, but I think it's a matter of timing.
I think that's probably right, Steve. I think as we've seen MoDOT and other entities advance improvements, the standards are continuing to evolve. And so my guess is if there was a major reconstruction of that corridor today, it would be built under a different standard, and this issue would be would likely be one that would be significantly addressed. And so I think it's a matter of the sequencing and the timing of the construction.
Well, and I think what Willie brings out is the reason why the federal government is mandating that and requiring us to go in and look at that.
Let's hear from Callie in Kansas City, Kansas. Hi, Callie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My husband and I travel 71 to go to the Ozarks, and it's great, except, of course, we don't like the lights. But I have a question. I haven't always lived in the Kansas City area, and when I moved here, 71 was there already. My question is, how did they get to the Ozarks or Springfield or wherever before 71 was built? I have no idea how you would get down there at that time.
Well, 71 Highway has been in existence, I think, since the 30s. But the way you get through the Kansas City metropolitan area has been, as Willie said, down through Troost, Prospect. I believe Holmes Road was mentioned also, if you're coming from the downtown area. But those corridors are urban corridors where it's already been built out and has been for decades.
What is the difference between the speed limit on 71 through the urban corridor and on those other routes like Troost and Prospect? Is it a pretty dramatic difference? Because it's not, as it goes through the urban corridor, it's 45, 55.
Right. Well, on, say, Prospect or Troost or the Paseo, you've got 35, 40-mile-an-hour speed limits maximum. In most congested areas would be less than that.
So how do you think that affects commuter time as far as like a difference between choosing to take 71 if you're not going to need to go all the way out to the suburbs versus taking Prospect or Truce?
Well, it all depends on your destination, where you're coming from, where you're going to. One of the surprising things we found out about the Watkins is that people north of the river were finding great benefits once it opened because they could come down into the plaza area for the employment at retail, at the hospital, at law firms.
Speaking of employment, Willie, in your neighborhood, do you see a lot of like businesses thriving, or do you think that there's still an overhang from this construction issue?
Well, that disruption, when it came and there was a lot of people moving out of the neighborhood, and there really hasn't been a great incentive to rebuild or put businesses back in the neighborhood because there was such a long lag time between initiation of the freeway and completion of the freeway. And so people just became disgusted. They moved out to Hooterville and various other places and just let it alone. And so it's laid there and nobody's come in with any new money to reinvest. So you've got the problems now. And to Cali, you go down 71, south on 71 to Harrisonville, take Highway 7 out of Harrisonville east to Clinton, take Highway 13 out of Clinton down to Springfield, and that's the way they used to go.
Huh. So what were those other highways again that you mentioned?
Well, you go to 71 down to Harrisonville, take Highway 7 east to Clinton, Missouri, and then in Clinton, Missouri, you get Highway 13, which will take you down to Springfield, Missouri, in that Ozark era.
You really know your way around.
Yeah, I've been traveling there for 50 years, and so every weekend you get about, they probably improved it now, but you get behind the campers, the boaters, and you'd have a string of traffic all the way from Springfield to Harrisonville on Sunday evening, traveling at about 40 miles an hour, and you couldn't pass anybody. So I think they've made it dual lanes now, but that's part of the reason why you got 71. It's been improved and turned to Interstate 49 below Grandview now.
Let's turn to Barbara in Lee's Summit, who called us at 816-235-2888, and you can do that too, by the way. Barbara in Lee's Summit, good morning.
Good morning. I was calling regarding the issue of a caller earlier, and I've been in and out on the conversation, so I don't know if it was addressed, but he made a comment that he thought it should have been like above ground all the way. Originally, it was designed that way. Because I worked for the company that did the original design, and I lived in the neighborhood as I was growing up, and if they'd gone through with the original design, I believe that it would have been a much easier commute, and people in the neighborhood would have been happier also.
What would have made that better? Why?
Well, because you're not going to have people trying to cross on foot or cars, so that would eliminate a lot of the accidents that have occurred because people are impatient, unfortunately. But I think that if they had had it above ground, it would have kept the speed limit up instead of going fast, slow, all the way downtown.
Do you think that the end result was a result of politics or the concerns of the people in the neighborhoods?
I believe it was politics, because it took so long to get this completed, to buy up all the land and get it going, that I think it turned into politics because we had so many different leaders with their hands in the mix, making decisions, not doing anything wrong, but they were just, different ideas along the way. And so things got changed.
Steve, that kind of goes back to your point about too many cooks in the kitchen, right?
Well, I think that was Willie's point. One of the things I want to point out, though, is what we have right now is safe. It's as safe as we can make it. It flows as well as we can. We've maxed out the signal timing. Operation Green Light and Kansas City Scout have been great technological factors in making this corridor work better as far as moving vehicles. But what is going to make this corridor safer is going to be the behavior of the people who are driving it. Don't be distracted, particularly around the signals. Make sure that you buckle up. We point out a lot that you're going to be gambling anytime you get in a vehicle. So if you buckle up, you put the odds in your favor.
Well, how do you change behavior around things like the stoplights when people aren't accustomed to encountering stoplights on a highway, like a first-time driver on 71 who's just taken that turn off of some other road like 435, for example? How do you educate people and make it safer, especially for those unfamiliar drivers?
Well, for those drivers first encountering that, far in advance of those signals are signs that light up and say that there's a red signal ahead. And when that signal is red, it says red, it's lit up. That helps prepare people approaching that. We urge people to keep their focus on the highways, keep their focus on driving, not on their phone, not on turning up or down the radio or eating or whatever else they might be distracted by.
Tom, you were talking earlier about plans for public transit along this route, possibly expanding. How would that change the look of things?
Well, it may not change the look of things in the initial phases. If you're familiar with the corridor, there are sections that have very wide shoulders that are there to provide refuge if cars get stranded or pulled off, but they're also there as potentially reserved capacity for some future alternative use. And so one of the proposals is, are there strategies that could be applied to public transportation, like allowing buses some special privileges on the roadway with regards to utilizing that extra space to bypass traffic or congestion, or to bypass signals through some signalization techniques to provide the transit a competitive advantage over the auto and make it more attractive? So again, one of the solutions to managing the volumes is to try to encourage folks to use alternative modes of transportation in the corridor. And so there's some lower cost things that we can do with expanding existing services that really wouldn't necessitate really extensive overhauls to the system.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're talking this morning about Highway 71 and how it affects different people in different communities in our city differently. And we've got a call now from Thomas in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just noticed that Willie's comment earlier about minority people of color in the community of 71 Highway, and I think that maybe the conversation was a little bit dismissive of that. I think that while it's probably the most uncomfortable thing to talk about, race does play a factor. And, I appreciate the comments about, the sequence of it not being right, and, I don't think it needs to be a polarizing issue or a political or even a controversial one, but I do think that talking about race in an earnest way is very, very important when it comes to Kansas City community, especially the heart of it, like 71 cuts right through.
Do you think that race continues to play a part in current conversations about it, or do you feel that this is that's a conversation about history?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that the biggest issue today, and the reason why I called in, was because to not talk about it is to make the mistake of, you know, running the risk of repeating history and perpetuating systems that disadvantage certain people unfairly. So while it's uncomfortable, I don't think that it needs to be the focal point of the conversation, but I do think that it needs to be in there because, you know, it's an important reality that we live in, and to not acknowledge it is, I believe, to make a huge mistake.
Well, thanks so much for that input, Thomas. And maybe, Tom, would you care to comment on maybe how race is or isn't playing a role in conversations about public transit?
Sure. We very much so they've played a role in a much broader even conversation around equity. And then it's not just about race, but it's about income. It's about geographic location. It's about a whole host of things. Race is obviously our region has a past history, and that's a very important and sensitive issue that I agree with the caller can't be ignored. In fact, our regional policies have recently been adopted. We just adopted and updated a regional policy framework to guide some of our regional planning that speaks specifically on the very front end to this issue of equity. And how are we utilizing our limited resources to be sensitive to not just future issues, but to past issues that need to be rectified? And so I think very much it's on the radar screen with regards to our regional processes.
Willie, in your neighborhood today, some of the comments that we heard in a story that we heard earlier in the show were that there were concerns about segregating neighborhoods. Do you feel that your neighborhood is... of course, we are past official segregation, but do you think that there is still a legacy of segregation in your neighborhood?
Yeah, that's why the neighborhood, when I moved to Kansas City, where I live now and the places that I've lived there for the most part, were integrated. Central High School was integrated, and this was black and white. And then, for whatever reason, white flight, housing block busting and what have you, and then this Midtown Freeway started buying up property. It divided, and all the white folks moved south, and the affluent blacks moved out as well. Now, I could have moved out of the neighborhood 40, 50 years ago because my income allowed me to do so, but I made a conscious choice to stay within the neighborhood because I didn't think all of the decent and, rich people like me needed to move out of the neighborhood. But here's the thing that I thank Thomas for bringing that back up. I worked in the police department for 30 years. And I'll just leave it with this. Whether or not there was a conscious decision to involve race in the how the freeway was constructed or whatever else happened, if you get shot accidentally, you're just as dead as you were shot on purpose. You need to think about the results, the consequences of what happened, not why it happened. We look into, we never figure out what somebody's thinking, but we ought to think about the end results. If we do something and it causes this problem, then that's the problem that needs to be addressed. And that's the thing that was not addressed. I don't think taking into consideration some of the decisions that were made in regards to the freeway and the impact it had on the neighborhood and the people in the neighborhood.
Do you think there is a way to address that problem now?
Oh, God, it takes a lot. What you're doing now is good. And it takes lots of money to redo the bridge, the roadwork, everything like that. But Mayor James, I'll say this, out of all the mayors, has seemed to have spent more money and time and energy into investing in the third district. And each of the mayors had their own projects. Like Kay Barnes was rebeautifying downtown, which was good. I think Berkeley went up north of the river, and Mayor Cleaver went southwest. Well, James is kind of working on the third district, which is helping us out tremendously in the area in which we live. And for that, I'm thankful.
Let's turn now to Judy in Mission Hills. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Can you hear me? I'm on my cell phone.
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
I know I'm calling in late, and I apologize because I only caught part of the conversation. But I understand there's a gentleman there, I think Willie is his name, who I believe must live in that general area that was under discussion and affected by Highway 71. Am I correct about
yeah.
that? I grew up on 63rd Street, and I have, I get a little annoyed when I think of what happened to that area. Excuse me, and my allergies, and I just have cautions in general. I don't know, is it a civil engineer or a member of the city council who is there? I heard him speak briefly. I lived between South Benton and Chestnut.
Judy,
from
do you
1942
have? Do you have a question for us? Because we're getting right out of here.
I'm sorry. What?
Do you have a question that you want to ask? Because we got to get out of here.
Oh well, I just want to affirm the caution that when you disturb neighborhoods, whether it's from a real estate point of view, whether it's street widening, which they did in the 50s, I guess, when Starlight was. You know, they widened the street, took yards away, but not in the Brookside area.
Okay, well, that's sadly all the time we have for today. And I'm going to just say goodbye to our guests. Our guests are Steve Porter, Tom Garand, and Willie Kolkager.
Willie Kolkager.
Kolkager.
Pronounce the L. Klager. Willie Kolkager.
Willie Kolkager. This conversation will continue both on the air and online at kcur.org. Follow us on Twitter and stay current on all of the discussions in KCUR's Beyond Our Borders series, exploring the lines that unite and divide our metro. Tune in tomorrow to catch the food critics talking about the latest restaurant news and cheese. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Stay tuned for Up to Date.